Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Thursday morning, July 9th, 2009. You're listening to EWTN Global Catholic Radio. My name is Teresa Tomio. The name of this particular program is Catholic Connection. Thanks for joining us this morning. Our phone number, if you have a question for either of our guests this morning, 877-573-7825, 877-573-7825. We have a dynamic lineup, as we always do for you. Dr. Pia De Seleni, who's our resident moral theologian, is going to be joining us at about, probably 10, 12 minutes past the hour. And then at the bottom of the hour, we are going to take a look at this new study. It came out to actually fairly recently, within the last week, very recently, I should say, and there was a report put out by Focus on the Family. The study was actually a peer-reviewed scientific survey looking at more than a century of research regarding sexual orientation, and it's about the fact that sexual orientation can be changed. So we're bringing back on the program Richard Cohn, who's a therapist and has a wonderful website, changeispossible.com. And he tells us in the email correspondence that we have with him on a regular basis that he's good friends with the lead author of this study, and that he's been saying this for years and looking at other reports that confirm what this new study shows, that sexual orientation can indeed be changed. Richard himself came out of the homosexual lifestyle many years ago, is now married with children, has his own ministry, and works, as I said, with same-sex couples in helping them deal with same-sex attraction and coming out of those lifestyles. His website, again, changeispossible.com. So we'll talk about this report, but also about efforts, you know, to push for so-called same-sex marriage, a homosexual agenda out there, and how do we approach this from a truly Christian perspective with love and respect for the dignity of that human person, but giving them the truth. You know, the Holy Father's encyclical, his latest encyclical, Caritas in Veritate, is all about love and truth, charity and truth. That, you know, true love contains truth, and without it, it really isn't love at all. And really, this is the whole situation that we're dealing with here, is that when you love someone, you want to give them the truth. And how do we share that truth with all human beings? And the Holy Father even does address very specifically in this new document, this new encyclical, the issue of marriage and how it is to be, as God ordained it, between one man and one woman, and why this benefits, of course, the people involved in that relationship, but also society as a whole, and has to do with the proper properly ordained and godly ordained development of the human person. So much to discuss this morning, and I'm sure Pia will be weighing in on the encyclical as well. And again, you are welcome to take part in the conversation at 877-573-7825. I do want to mention for the listeners down in Melbourne, Florida, that I'll be doing a fundraiser and a keynote talk at Ascension Parish on July 23rd. That's a Thursday evening. I want to let people know about that. It's a relatively new station, and they invited me to speak there, and I'm very, very excited about it. Glad to help. Let me give you the station's website if you want more information. Actually, it's Divine Mercy Catholic Radio, and it's divinemercyradio.com. So you can check them out. It's 9:20 a.m., and they're in Melbourne, Florida, which is about I'd say 45 minutes southeast of Orlando, a beautiful community. And again, I'll be down there at the end of the month, and I will be doing a talk on the media. Actually, I'll be doing my Extreme Makeover talk that I gave in Atlanta, seeing ourselves through the eyes of Christ in the church. And it's all about detoxing from the culture. And, of course, now that we have the new encyclical, the Holy Father has a whole section in here, a couple of paragraphs about the media, a nice little chunk and lots of nuggets there about the media and the influence of the media. There's a lot of new studies that have come out in the last month that I'll be sharing as well. So check out Divine Mercy Catholic Radio at divinemercyradio.com. I hope to see you there. And I also want to remind you, I spoke with Steve Ray via email and also our travel agency, Corporate Travel. We already have almost one bus filled for the Turin trip that we're doing in May of 2010. This is an opportunity to see the Shroud of Turin. And Steve may have mentioned this a couple weeks ago when he was on with us about one of the feast days. But if you didn't hear it, the Shroud is going to be exposed for a short period of time. And we are taking a group there next year, May 11th, 2010. And as I said, we already have about 43 to 45 people, which is almost one full bus already. Steve told me in an email this morning that we could take up to three buses. But right now we're looking to fill that second bus. A couple ways you can find out about it. I do have a link on my website, on my homepage at teresatomeo.com. Scroll down, you'll see the icon to the Turin trip. And just click on that. It has the flyer there and all the information. You can also go to avemariaradio.net. It's on the homepage. And stevegoes.com, which is his travel website, also has all the details. But here's what's interesting about it. We're starting in Turin, but that's not all, folks. We are also going to Assisi, spending two nights in Assisi. We are going to Lanciano to see the Eucharistic miracle there and to spend some great time in prayer. We're also going to San Giovanni Rotondo, which, of course, is the home of Padre Pio, the great St. Padre Pio. And then we're going to end up in Rome, and there'll be a chance to even extend your trip, if you like, a couple of days and stay with Steve and Janet Ray to go on a tour of Rome. So if you'd like more information, check it out online, avemariaradio.net, teresatomeo.com, and it's Teresa without an H, T-E-R-E-S-A, teresatomeo.com, or stevegoes.com. I really hope you can join us. This is going to be really a once-in-a-lifetime thing. If you've never been to Rome or to Israel, you always say there's two places every Catholic should go. You know, and pilgrimage is a regular part. It was a regular part of our journey as Christians, you know, very, very early on in Christianity. People would go up to Jerusalem, or they'd make these pilgrimages to these holy sites around the world. It really does, it's a life-changing experience. I was just talking to John Hale from Corporate Travel about this yesterday, how so many people have come back to the church. They've, you know, gone on a pilgrimage with a family member or a friend, thinking, oh, this will be nice. I'll get to see some sites and, you know, go to some neat places and see some great artwork. And then they end up having this profound, faith-filled experience that just changes their lives. There's nothing like being at these places, I'm telling you. It really is life-changing. And I was just talking about this with my husband, too, the other day, about that's why I never get tired of going to Italy or to Israel. Because when you walk on at these places, which are so holy, the places of the great saints, and especially in Israel, the land the Lord walked on and lived in, it does change your life. It's you're never the same. Mass is never the same. Let me tell you. So think about it, pray about it, but if you can do so quickly, do it quickly because it's filling up. Turin, May 2011, then we're going back to Israel in June, so hopefully you can join us for one or, I don't know, maybe both, right? Just pray about that. We'd love to have you join us. Right now, though, it is just about 7 minutes past the hour on a Thursday morning edition of Catholic Connection, and it's time to check our news on a Thursday. Well, the Catholic Archdiocese of Sydney inviting Australia-based researchers to apply for a $100,000 grant to support and foster research on the therapeutic potential of adult stem cells. The grant is a fourth announced by Cardinal George Pell of Sydney and is intended to advance science and circumvent human embryonic stem cell research, which requires, of course, the creation and destruction of human embryos. According to Catholic News Agency, in announcing the grant, Cardinal Pell saying that the Church promotes and encourages medical research, and we strongly support stem cell research and other forms of biotechnology that respect the dignity of every human life, including that of the unborn. Well, Massachusetts filing a lawsuit against the U.S. government over a federal law that defines marriage as a union between a man and a woman. The lawsuit arguing that Defense of Marriage Act interferes with the state's right to regulate marriage as it sees fit. The law denies federal recognition of same-sex marriage and allows states the right to refuse to recognize gay marriages performed in other states. The lawsuit was filed in U.S. District Court in Boston. It maintains that some 16,000 same-sex couples married in the Commonwealth since 2004 are being unfairly denied federal benefits, including income tax credits, health insurance, and Social Security payments, which they say are granted to heterosexual couples. Now, Chris Menew, the president of the Massachusetts Family Institute, which opposes gay marriage, telling the Boston Globe the suit will have no credibility in federal court. Meanwhile, the group Stand for Marriage Maine announcing it has collected more than 55,000 signatures. That's the amount required to place on the 2009 ballot, a people's veto of state law implementing same-sex marriage. Stand for Marriage Maine is now collecting additional signatures as insurance for when the Secretary of State certifies their validity. The coalition was formed after Maine Governor John Baldacci signed legislation in May approving same-sex marriages. And a Polish group is planning prayer sessions to protest a concert by the American pop star Madonna, which is set for August 15th, of course, the Marian Feast of the Assumption. The concert is scheduled to take place in Warsaw, Poland. Miriam Brudzinski is head of the Committee for the Defense of the Faith and Tradition, saying his group would continue its, quote, crusade with daily prayer sessions outside the city hall there beginning August 1st. He's an independent local counselor who previously represented the Catholic political party, the League of Polish Families, and has advocated that City Hall ban Madonna's first ever show in Poland. And when it comes to which Republican candidate should take up or take on pro-abortion President Barack Obama in 2012, GOP voters say they're essentially evenly split between three former candidates, Mitt Romney, Sarah Palin, and Mike Huckabee, are within just a few percentage points of one another. In a new Rasmussen poll released just yesterday, the former Massachusetts governor topping all Republican candidates with a backing of 25% of GOP voters. Palin, who of course recently announced she would resign her position as Alaska's governor, follows Romney in second place with about 24%. Huckabee, the former governor of Arkansas, receiving the support of 22% of GOP members. Well, the Chinese president just yesterday quitting the G8 summit in Italy to deal with an ethnic crisis back home where riots have left at least 156 people dead now. Meanwhile, as Nina Marie Potts explains, leaders from the world's most industrialized nations are meeting in an Italian town that was devastated 3 months ago by an earthquake.
Security is tight. At least 36 protesters have been arrested ahead of the meeting. The agenda includes the global financial crisis, food security, climate change, and Iran. But the departure of Chinese President Hu Jintao to deal with ethnic riots back home deals a blow to hopes of getting China fully committed to climate change goals. U.S. President Barack Obama is attending the summit along with Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, fresh from talks in Moscow where they agreed to cut nuclear weapons on both sides. Nina Maria Potts, Brussels.
A bizarre YouTube video showing the beheading of an 8-foot fiberglass replica of the Statue of Liberty is being studied by the FBI. The video showing someone sawing off the statue's head and ends with the words, "Death to America." The clip is similar to videos filmed by Islamist terrorists showing the decapitation of Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl back in 2002. And senators say they're outraged over security lapses at federal facilities. Undercover investigators recently able to smuggle liquid bomb-making materials past guard stations at all 10 federal facilities that they entered. Senator Joe Lieberman speaking out against the findings during a recent Senate hearing.
It really is outrageously unacceptable that the federal employees working within our federal buildings and the citizens who pass through them are still apparently so utterly exposed to potential attack by terrorists or other violent people.
Lieberman chairing the Senate Homeland Security Committee, agents say they were even able to enter buildings on the campus of the Department of Homeland Security. The undercover agents then assembled bombs and carried them around in briefcases in government offices. And New York Senate Republican leader Dean Skelos is blasting Governor Patterson's appointment there of a lieutenant governor. He raises questions if the governor has legal authority to tap Richard Ravitch to preside over the state Senate.
Attorney General Andrew Cuomo has already said it's unconstitutional for the governor to appoint a lieutenant governor, and I agree.
The Republican also defending the GOP-led political coup to form a new governing coalition last month, blaming the Senate Democrats for refusing there to recognize a change in Senate leadership, which sparked the gridlock. And that old saying, think positively, well, still counts, still matters. A newly released study from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill finds there is some value to those words once printed on bumper stickers and elsewhere. Psychologist Barbara Frederickson, who is a principal investigator for the study, says if happiness is something you want out of life, then focusing daily on the small moments and cultivating positive emotions is the way to go. For the month-long study, 86 people were asked to track their emotions. Frederickson says the findings show levels of positive emotions that produced good benefits were not extreme. Apparently, she says, it appears just taking advantage of small upbeat moments during the day helps positive emotions bloom. The researchers also say people who feel more positive about themselves then become more open, allowing them to rebound more easily from adversity and stress. It also helps to ward off depression. Study details, by the way, if you'd like to read more, are in the June issue of the journal Emotion. Right now, it is just about 15 minutes past the hour. It's a Thursday morning edition of Catholic Connection Coast to Coast and around the globe. Up next, moral theologian Dr. Pia de Seleni. Moraltheologian.com is her website. If you would like to find out more information about Pia and also see some of the great articles she posts there, as well as her own commentary, again, moraltheologian.com. We'll be right back.
During this recession, many investors are afraid to invest in stocks or bonds. It may actually be a good time to invest, since prices are now low. At Ave Maria Mutual Funds, we believe our professional investment experts have positioned the portfolios to take advantage of the economic and market recovery we expect over the next few years. Now may be an opportune time to examine your portfolio and see if the Ave Maria Mutual Funds could help you achieve your goals. To learn more about the pro-life and pro-family Ave Maria Mutual Funds, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA to receive a free investor kit, or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Sports Investment Council, Inc., a registered investment advisor established in 1980, serves as an investment advisor. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. To obtain performance through the most recent month-end and a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC.
Hello, this is Steve Ray with another Pilgrimage Minute. Jesus went on long pilgrimages, and he went on some short ones. He walked for a week up to Jerusalem, but he also spent many nights praying in the nearby mountains. I've been atop Mount Arbel looking over Capernaum and the Sea of Galilee, and I imagine Jesus up there on a short pilgrimage to pray. If Jesus thought time alone with the Father was important, how much more should we? Jesus asked his disciples to pray with him in the Garden of Gethsemane. He taught them to pray the Our Father on the Mount of Olives. He wants to teach us the same way. Jesus asks, "What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Do you live for the riches of the world?" Maybe it's time to slow down and climb the mountain. Maybe it's time to put priorities right. Start with a pilgrimage.
More information on taking a pilgrimage can be found at AveMariaRadio.net and look for the pilgrimage link at the top of the page.
Minutes past the hour. It's Catholic Connection. Teresa Tomeo with you. We are going over to the Northwest Coast right now for a change. She used to be on the East Coast, but she's moved to a different location there now, back in her, actually, that's your home state. You grew up in California, right, Pia? Good morning.
I did, yeah. We're here just visiting family until we get settled in Seattle at the end of August, but I've returned to the West Coast.
Well, Seattle's a beautiful city. I haven't been there in a long time, but I loved it when I was there.
It's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it makes you want to become an outdoors person right away.
Yeah, it's real pretty. Well, thank you for getting up bright and early. And we were talking during the break that you're going to try to stay on your East Coast time, to kind of maybe get your early start in the morning, huh?
I'd like to. You know, it's always good to be ambitious.
So we'll just hope for that, right? And we'll get you in the mood, because we'll wake you up every Wednesday morning nice and bright and early.
Sounds good.
All right, now I know that you've been going through the encyclical, and you and I are just so giddy about it because it's just so good. Let me get your comments, and I'm sure we'll be talking about this for many weeks to come. But you're a moral theologian. That's what your background's in. You're a PhD. What do you think?
I mean, I think I'm blown away. I think it's fantastic because he's one of the brilliant things that I love about my work, about, you know, studying church teaching, is that we continually get down to, well, wait a minute, what's really at the heart of the matter? I mean, you can talk about the economy, you can talk about politics, and all these different things that are really important, but what's at the heart of the matter? And I love how he, in dealing with social justice, he brings it down to relationships, and fundamentally the relationships of the Trinity, but also the way that we live relationships with other people. And he says, you know, just because we have globalization doesn't mean that there's going to be an automatic brotherhood or fraternity. And it naturally, we find ways to separate ourselves. We look at other people, we say they're different from us, they're not the same. They think differently, they dress differently, they look differently. And he's saying the only way that you're going to find fraternity is, again, going back to relationship and mirroring the relationships, honestly, of the Trinity, and seeing how God, the relationships in God the Father are how they exist, and how even though, you know, you have God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit, they're all very different, and yet they're linked. And these three persons are so linked that they're linked in one God. And so that type of unity is, I think, he's challenging us to begin to see in our human relations kind of a mirror or a reflection of the divine relations. And that is a constant challenge that we find, I think, in all of the church teaching, is getting back to not only what's essential, but what is the essential challenge, and that is bringing God into our relationships or living up to the Imago Dei, the image of God that each one of us is born with. And I was really struck by the fact that early in this encyclical, he references Humanae Vitae.
Yeah.
And you think, well, wait a minute, what does Humanae Vitae have to do with an encyclical on social justice? Well, it has everything to do with it, because Humanae Vitae, you know, as we've said before, everybody says it's the birth control encyclical, but it really isn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's the encyclical about human life. It's about the family. And where do you first learn how to relate to other people? It's within the family, and that's essentially where you learn to become a citizen. And if you don't learn it there, it's difficult to learn it somewhere else. And that's what we see when we see in sections of society where the family is breaking down. We see that these people are not able to be, are very rarely able to be effective members of society. And so I love how he just makes it, it's really all about what's being human, and ultimately what's about being human is responding to this call to be, to live the image of God, to live that gift that we have been given, which is to be in relation with others. There is no other creature that lives in relation with others. We are the only creatures that do that. And that significance, he's really hammering it in here. And that means that you start to care about what you do with your money. That means if you have a lot of wealth and you say, hey, wait a minute, you know, there's some speculative markets here and I can make a ton of money here, it means that you say, well, who else is involved here? Is this just about me making money? Mm-hmm. Or are there other people involved here? What do I owe them? What can I do for them? So I think this is brilliant because it's really a comprehensive approach to social justice. I also like the fact that he is relying so heavily on the memory of Paul VI mm-hmm. and what Paul VI taught, because mm-hmm. in some Catholic circles, you know, people are like, well, Paul VI was fine on Humanae Vitae, but other than that, he was a little too social justice. I think this is really great because we, you know, particularly in the church in the United States, we have these divisions between so-called conservative and liberal Catholics, and I think Benedict is simply getting at what's Catholic. Let's
right.
leave aside liberal and conservative. Let's talk about what's Catholic. And I think he's challenging all of us. He's saying, you know, there's a section in there where he talks about respect for human life and the dignity of life. And I think it's pretty clear that he's saying you can't be pro-life and not be concerned with social justice, and you can't be concerned with social justice and not be pro-life. There is a unity here and an integrity, and we all have to look beyond our immediate, maybe where we feel more immediately called to defend one issue than another, but we have to see that they are all united, and we can't ignore one at the peril of the other.
Yeah, and I'm looking at paragraph 28. I'm forgetting what chapter it's in. I've got it highlighted, underlined, starred. I've got, my husband was laughing at me last night because I was going over this and just, you know, my favorite sections and sections I want to read over and really ponder and pray about. But I'm reading from chapter 28. He says, one of the most striking aspects of development in the present day is the important question of respect for life, which cannot in any way be detached from questioning concerning the development of peoples. It is an aspect which has acquired increasing prominence in recent times, obliging us to broaden our concept of poverty and underdevelopment to include questions connected with the acceptance of life, especially in cases where it is impeded in a variety of ways. Not only does the situation of poverty still provoke high rates of infant mortality in many regions, but some parts of the world still experiences practices of demographic control on the part of governments that often promote contraception and even go as far to impose abortion. And then he goes into more detail and talks about the fact of the low birth rates in these countries and the impact it has on the economy. So he brilliantly ties this all together and says, look, once you remove, you know, the openness to life, you know, and the whole life issues from human development, you're going to have problems. And he just kind of, you know, very practically goes through the problems that are occurring.
Yeah, and I think what's also interesting is if you continue there, you can kind of read in the implication of a lot of U.S. foreign aid,
yes.
where we're exporting mm-hmm. a mentality, you know, where, okay, in the United States, obviously, contraception, there's no forced contraception or sterilization, but we are exporting a mentality to other countries through our foreign aid, and rather than looking at the true good of the human person. And when I was working on issues related to this in Washington, D.C., I continue to say, you know, as John Paul II pushed for, I mean, education. If we really want to help people in the developed world, you provide for their basic material needs, and you educate them. It's only when people are educated that they can make decisions for themselves and they can truly develop. And we've exported this mentality that, you know, as long as you only have 1.7 children and you can afford to buy a laptop, then hey, you're in a good position. And again, that doesn't get at what's truly human.
What do you think? I mean, so far the response in the media has certainly been interesting. They haven't picked up on the life issues. They have picked up on his discussions and criticisms of the free market. But Joan Lewis and I were discussing this yesterday, that when it came to the free market, he wasn't saying that the free market is essentially bad. He's saying that if you have a free market without ethics, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, but that's what's bad. So already the media are picking up on certain Obama-like themes and spinning that, and they haven't mentioned anything about, you know, where he talks about in this particular section in paragraph 28 about the respect for life.
I mean, this is typical, you know, the media, all of us, no matter who we are, when we read something, we're going to be drawn to what resonates with us, what we're most interested in. And, you know, the secular media, the mainstream media does have a particular agenda. You know, they're kind of looking to bolster the image of Obama. They would love to kind of be provocative and find this synergy between President Obama and Benedict XVI without looking at the big picture. So it's to be expected. That's where I think that alternative forms of media are so critical here to get the real story out. And, you know, independent media like your show, like the Internet, you know, different, there are really good blogs out there, different forms of Catholic news and so forth. That's where it's important to kind of get the rest of the story out. And I think we're really lucky to have all these tools that just continue to increase. We've never been in a position where we had so many tools to disseminate information.
Yeah, and I also want to encourage people, you know, I mentioned your website because you always have great pieces on there, your own, and you know, collect a lot of good stuff from other different, you know, Catholic thinkers and whatnot and different publications. But, you know, I was on Zenit this morning, and they have some terrific reflections. And Joan Lewis has a great one on EWTN.com and her Joan's Rome. And then on Zenit, you've got Father Fessier, you've got Father Robert Barron, you've got a number of other top Catholic thinkers that are on there with beautiful commentaries about the Holy Father's encyclical. And this is great because it helps us, you know, you can learn from people like yourself, you know, with the backgrounds and with the degrees who are studying these things and say, okay, what am I to draw from this as a Catholic? But I really think, and this is what Carl Anderson said in his commentary from the Knights of Columbus, that each Catholic should read this. This is not something just for someone like yourself who has a PhD, you know, you're a moral theologian. But I didn't have any problem understanding this at all.
I mean, all of these things are extremely approachable. I mean, you may need to, you know, give yourself a few minutes where you're not being barraged by, you know, the demands of children or the ringing phone. You may have to make the effort to carve out some space so you can actually focus on it, but it's completely accessible. And you know, maybe you can't read it start to finish in one sitting, but it's something that you can read a little bit at a time, and you might even get more out of it reading it a little bit at a time rather than just plowing through it. But I think it's extremely accessible. And, you know, we're so fortunate because we do have these just regular encyclicals, regular moments of teaching that people can access and experience for themselves. And then, as a, you know, you experience it for yourself, and then you draw on the reflections of other people, and maybe you even offer some of your own reflections. But you really can communicate, create. I think we're in a fortunate position to create a community of learning, even though we're all spread out throughout the world, and we may not even know each other or see each other face to face. That's one of the fun things that I've been experiencing, just being on Facebook now and Twitter,
right. And
being part of an active community and participating in it. And it's fascinating. I think we're in a very fortunate period to create a community of learning out of a community of believers.
Mm-hmm. This is like a little, I told my local listeners this morning, I've been getting them bits and pieces of it every morning in my editorial segments at 8:15 Eastern Time in the first hour of Catholic Connection. They're probably, you know, sick of me by now saying, read it, read it, read it. Every day since it came out, I've been like, read it, go on this website, go on this website. But I feel like I'm carrying around with me because I printed it out. And I like to have things in hard copy. Maybe I'm just old school that way. But I printed it out from the Vatican website, and I've been carrying it around with me and going over it. I've read it once completely, and now I started it over again last night, and then I went through and was highlighting certain sections. But I feel like I have this treasure chest, and I'm walking around with these incredible, you know, jewels and this wealth of knowledge and information. How cool that we can access so quickly something so profound from the chair of Peter, you know?
And that it's being written, I mean, really with us in mind, with each one of us in mind. I mean, he's not writing this just so that a few bishops can read it or a few erudite professors can read it. I mean, this is being written for everyone, and including non-Catholics. And I think it's an invitation. I think it's an important discussion that we need to be having, because we do have a problem in a global problem. You know, the issues of outsourcing, the issues of development, the economic crises that, you know, the entire world is experiencing right now. So we do need some substantive answers. I mean, things have to change, or we're going to be even in worse trouble. And I think it's beautiful that here's a start. Here's a start to an answer. And, of course, he's not proposing policy. He's just proposing a philosophical and theological framework. These are the things that you need to keep in mind when developing policy, when developing programs. When you come to face, you know, when you just are faced with these issues, what are the things you need to keep in mind? Well, this is the framework. So he's offering a framework. Again, it's not policy, it's not implementation, but it's a framework, and it's the work. There's still a lot of work that's left to be done, and that's basically, he's handing that over to us. We're the ones that are involved in business. We're the ones that are involved in development and all these different aspects, and so we're the ones that need to take this and implement it.
He has this great line. I'm going to close with this, Pia, from Pope Paul VI, and this is in paragraph 53, where he says that the world is in trouble. The late Holy Father Pope Paul VI said the world is in trouble because of the lack of thinking. I thought, whoa, what a profound statement. And what Pope Benedict does in this encyclical is he helps us really think and ponder and connect the dots. You know?
Absolutely.
Great stuff. Well, listen, thanks for joining us bright and early. Congratulations on the move, and we pray that you get settled in quite nicely, and we look forward to more commentary next week on this amazing gift to us, this encyclical Caritas in Veritate. Dr. Pia De Seleni is a moral theologian. She joins us on Thursday mornings. Her website, moraltheologian.com. We'll be right back with Richard Cohn on this latest study regarding same-sex attraction. Stay tuned.
The Alexian Brothers, a Catholic religious order of men, look back on 800 years of service.
Our concern was always with feeding the poor, nursing the sick, and burying the dead. There was a time when most of our men were nurses. That's not the case anymore. We have MBAs, mechanics, engineers.
The brothers still serve the poor, the elderly, the sick, and dying.
I knew that as an Alexian brother, I could make a difference in people's lives.
If you're a man generous enough to serve the weakest, call toll-free 1-800-556-0332.
Considering the economy, there's never been a better time to belong to a credit union. Michigan Catholic Credit Union is the one to join. They have the money to lend, and they're writing auto loans every day. Not only will they fit the payments to your budget, but they're big supporters of the Invest in America program. MCCU members are eligible for significant automaker discounts on the purchase or lease of a new GM or Chrysler vehicle. Even better, in some cases, that discount can be applied on top of other promotions. MCCU is known for its auto loans because they have the same low rates for new, used, or refinanced vehicles. Great terms and payments to fit your budget, and you can get discounted auto insurance through AAA of Michigan or Members Home and Auto Insurance. Don't miss out on this great opportunity. Get pre-approved for your new vehicle loan, or see if you can save money by refinancing your current loan today. Call at MCCU today for more details at 866-NOW-MCCU or visit online at mishcathcu.org. Because if you're Catholic, it's where you belong.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I am Father Thomas Loya, and this week on Light of the East on Ave Maria, we will talk about
the U.S. military troop withdrawal from Iraq and the implications for Christians, to raise awareness of the American brothers and sisters about the plight of Christians in Iraq.
Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday mornings at 7 on 990 WDEO.
The hour now, Thursday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Hope you're doing well. If you have a question, 877-573-7825. Richard Cohn is back with us, and we so appreciate his insight and his knowledge on this topic of what's going on in the culture with the homosexual agenda. Brought Richard on, there is a study that just came out, actually, a report, and it was on the Focus on the Family website, one of their news services, CitizenLink, about the fact that there's a new report that's looked at, actually, a lot of research in the area of same-sex attraction. And, Richard, this is something that you've known for a while. And, by the way, Richard's website is changeispossible.com, that it is possible to, if you do have a same-sex attraction, to change that attraction through proper therapy. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Yes, Teresa, I know personally because I came out of homosexuality, and my wife and I last week celebrated 27 years of marriage.
Oh,
with
congratulations.
Our two beautiful kids, yeah. And so as a psychotherapist, yeah. I know over 22 years helping hundreds and thousands out of homosexuality that indeed change is possible. People are not born homosexual. We're all heterosexually designed, and therefore change is always possible. And this new study is wonderful, wonderful news.
All right, so tell us about it because you read the entire report, I understand.
Sure. This was published by NARTH, or the National Association for the Research and Therapy of Homosexuality. And if people are interested in reading it, they can go to the NARTH website. That's NARTH.com. And on the right column, they'll see the Journal of Human Sexuality, Volume 1, 2009. And what they did is they were taking the American Psychological Association spurious claims to task. The American Psychological Association accuses those who practice sexual reorientation therapy, like myself and others, and also religiously mediated organizations who help people out of homosexuality. And they say they basically have three complaints. One, there's no evidence that sexual reorientation therapy or these religious mediated organizations help people out of homosexuality. They said it doesn't work. The second claim is that efforts to change people from homosexual to heterosexual are psychologically harmful. And the third claim is that there is no greater pathology among the homosexual population than in the heterosexual population. And what this new study published by NARTH does is puts to rest all these false accusations. And what they did is they examined more than 100 years of professional and scientific literature from over 600 professional studies and reports from therapists, researchers, and former clients, which were published in professional and peer-reviewed journals. And what they found, Teresa, were three things. Number one, there is conclusive scientific data conducted from studies over the last 100 years that show both sexual reorientation therapy and religious mediated organizations help people to change from homosexual to heterosexual. So that's scientifically documented. Number two, it showed that these types of therapies and other help organizations are beneficial for these men and women. That's what most of these reports and scientific studies are showing. And third, that actually homosexuality is associated with a significantly higher risk for mental, emotional, and behavioral disorders, much, much more so than heterosexuality. And on page 87 of their of the journal, it synthesizes the literature from hundreds of sources, and it shows that despite knowing the risks for AIDS, homosexuals report that they continue to indulge in unsafe sexual, unprotected sexual practices, that homosexuals represent the highest number of sexually transmitted diseases way over the heterosexual population. Many homosexual sex practices are medically dangerous with or without protection, that 40% of homosexual adolescents report suicidal history, that homosexuals are more likely than heterosexuals to have mental health concerns such as eating disorders, personality disorders, paranoia, depression, anxiety, and that homosexual relationships are much, much more violent than heterosexual relationships, especially female-to-female relationships, and that societal bias and discrimination do not, in and of themselves, contribute to the majority of homosexual maladaptivity. So this wonderful new journal published by NARTH, which again is looking at over 600 studies reported by clinicians and therapists and former homosexuals of 100 years, is showing that change is possible and that it's helpful and that there is a greater degree of pathology in the homosexual community. This is just, they're just reporting the literature and the data. So again, people can go to the NARTH website, NARTH.com, or the gentleman who was the lead author for this study, mm-hmm. published by NARTH, was Dr. James Phelan. And 2 years ago, Teresa, in our newsletter, he did an abridged version, just a couple pages of this meta-analysis showing that change is possible. So if people go to our website, changeispossible.com, and click on newsletters on the menu, and then go to the archives, they can find a very brief article which says all the same things. They just click on Fall 2007 newsletter, or they'll see Is Gay to Straight Possible, a downloadable PDF file, and there they'll find a synthesis of all this literature that documents scientifically people are not born this way and that change is possible.
Have you seen any coverage? I know that, for example, Focus on the Family and some other Christian websites and maybe some conservative talk show radio networks have put this up, but yes. Has anybody out there in the secular media done anything with this? Have you seen anything so far?
Not one word. Okay. In fact, to the contrary, I mean, I read, I'm in the D.C. area. I read the Post this morning, Washington Post and the Washington Times. It's just unconscionable, Teresa. Almost every other page, there's an article about homosexual legislation mm-hmm. of one form or another trying to be pushed on the federal or state levels. There's not one mention about this new journal, which is documenting change, because they don't want to go against the likes of the American Psychiatric or Psychological Associations. And those organizations, most mental health organizations, they're being wagged by the tail, mm-hmm. Which is the gay and lesbian faction of those groups, are dictating policy, and people are afraid to stand up. So, no, this has not been reported in the secular media whatsoever.
You know, the timing on this is just amazing to me in terms of the Holy Father's latest encyclical. I mentioned it to you during the break, Charity
yes.
and Truth, where he talks about how we have to be. You can't have true human development and true charity and true social justice until you look at the natural plan of things and the natural plan of the person and the family. And he's talked specifically several times in this encyclical about marriage as God ordained it between a man and a woman. It's as if, and I think Chesterton said this, that, you know,
uh-huh.
we wanted to deny that natural law is fact, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, we just don't want to look at what the natural law says.
Right. I've been doing this for 22 years, helping people come out of homosexuality and traveling throughout the country and world and sharing this good news. And, you know, I know a lot of people who are invested in this, people who are coming out of homosexuality and their loved ones, the family members. These days, because as we were saying, in the media, in the political venue, there's so much pressure to bend and change the law against what the Holy Father is saying, natural law, man and woman.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wrote a new newsletter. If anyone's interested in our newsletter, they can just go to our website, changespossible.com, and email us. And in the newsletter, I said, you know, it's always darkest right before the dawn.
Mm.
So be of good cheer. You know, I've been fighting this a long time. And these people may get what they want, but it's not what they need.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to.
Well, that's what the Holy Father is saying. If you want real love, you have to have truth. Otherwise, it's not love.
It's false.
It's false.
It's fake.
Yeah.
And that's why in this new journal article by NARTH, they're showing that the results of homosexual condition and behavior is a lot of brokenness. In the behaviors, in the mental and emotional form, and relationally, there's just so much wounding because we know that people aren't born this way. People who have same-sex attractions, they're not inherently evil or bad people. They're hurt and they're wounded. And by legislating this, we're actually doing them the greatest disservice because they're not meant to live like that. It's men and women fit together beautifully. it's natural. Two men, if you just look at it biologically, two men or two women, we're not structured that way.
Mm-hmm.
So to endorse that is to harm these people. And we do have answers now. We don't just say you're wrong or you're bad. There are answers. And you know, I've written on this subject extensively, and God's work through me and brought me out of homosexuality. And I wrote Coming Out Straight, which is a four-step model how anybody can change from homosexual to heterosexual. And then the Gay Children Straight Parents model, that's for parents and family members and really the entire religious community. It's a 12-step plan how we can help anybody, whether they're homosexually oriented or questioning their sexuality or want to change. If you work this program, it brings them out of homosexuality. And, you know, there's a wonderful story of a guy named Tom in the Gay Children Straight Parents book, and he works actually for the government. And he came in strictly attracted to guys, didn't want to have it, so afraid, though, to give it up. It was like his best friend.
Mm-hmm.
But he was suffering so much. So just over the course of therapy for a little over 2 years, I mean, Teresa, it was just beautiful. This man just really yielded to the process and to God. And today he is heterosexually oriented. Mm-hmm. He's attracted to women, and he's dating. So it's a reality that men and women every day are coming out of homosexuality, and therefore to, you know, we were saying that the, I think it's the Attorney General Martha Coakley of Massachusetts is
who's
now
suing the federal government. Yeah, that's a story I had this morning. Yeah,
saying that the Defense of Marriage Act is violating their state law.
Let's take a quick break because we do have a lot of questions coming in. I did want to mention again, how can people get this latest report from NARTH? Is it on your website?
Yeah, they can. You can get an abridged version on our website, changespossible.com. Click on newsletters, fall 2007, and you'll get the report there. Or go to the NARTH, NARTH.com website. On the right-hand column, they'll see the Journal of Human Sexuality and click on that.
Okay, we'll be right back, and we'll take some calls. Terry from Dearborn, Michigan, thanks for holding. We'll get to you right after the break. Richard Cohen is our guest. Changespossible.com is his website. He's an author and a therapist, and we're talking about this latest report. A Citizen Link focused on the family had a big story on their news wire that went out on Monday on this. So, of course, right away I called Richard to get his take on this, and he was very, very familiar with it, as he just mentioned in the last 10 minutes or so. And then I also want to read a beautiful line from the encyclical from our Holy Father, Caritas in Veritate, about love and truth and what it really means when you love someone. We'll be right back.
Fully Alive. Reflections on the scripture readings of today's Mass with Father Pat Egan, chaplain of Ave Maria Radio.
I really need a roll of drums today for this gospel. It's important, really important, and it's on the Word of God. The Bible is a book, but it's not just a book, it's the book. The Church is a voice, not just one voice among many, but it's God's voice. And conscience is His voice in our hearts. Today's Gospel tells how God wants His Word preached, with power, with signs, wonders, and authority, but also how we should receive it, and that's my focus today, how we should receive the Word of God. Jesus instructs His disciples when they preach to heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse lepers, and cast out demons. You receive without paying, He said, give without pay. He said, take no gold, nor silver, nor copper in your belts, no bag for your journey, no two tunics, nor sandals, nor staff. And whatever town or village you enter, find out who's worthy in it and stay there. And if anyone will not receive you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet as you leave that house. Truly I say to you, it'll be better on the day of judgment for Sodom and Gomorrah than for that town. Now Sodom and Gomorrah were bywords for judgment, cities destroyed by God for their sin and disobedience. It's a dangerous thing to ignore the voice of God and to blow off His word. And it's time to turn back and obey if you slipped as an individual person. And it's time for us to turn back again as a church and as a nation. I'm Father Pat Egan, chaplain to Ave Maria Radio, commenting on the readings read today at Mass. You can reach me on 734-930-3257. And remember, inspired by the word of God, you can be more fully alive.
Without truth, charity degenerates into sentimentality. Love becomes an empty shell to be filled in an arbitrary way. In a culture without truth, this is the fatal risk facing love. It falls prey to contingent, subjective emotions and opinions. The word love is abused and distorted to the point where it comes to mean the opposite. Truth frees charity from the constraints of an emotionalism that deprives it of relational and social content. And that is just a few lines from Pope Benedict's latest encyclical, Caritas in Veritate. And boy, Richard, if that doesn't hit the nail on the head, I don't know what does.
Absolutely.
You know?
And so many people using the homosexual heartstring to pull the population to feeling sorry for them. So it is based, I call it the love argument. And if you listen to, like, Keith Olbermann on, NBC, on their cable channel, and, oh, he just ad nauseum. It is. It's love without truth. And why don't they pass this special legislation? Love is love. No. Without truth, it's deadly, just as the Pope said.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Terry has been patiently holding from Dearborn, Michigan, and suburban Detroit. Hey, Terry, thanks for waiting. Appreciate it.
Oh, hi, folks. Well, yeah, I think Keith Olbermann has some personal issues, but that's not what.
That's a whole other show. We'll talk about that another time.
Yeah, Dr. O'Thorne, you cited off some resources when we discussed this issue with family, friends, and coworkers, and I was writing them down. But what is this journal? Is this a new journal?
Yes, it's brand new, called The Journal of Human Sexuality. It's published by NARTH, the National Association for the Research and Therapy of Homosexuality, and their website, again, is narth.com.
Okay.
So this
comment,
is the first issue of the journal.
Yeah, Teresa?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, the other day I heard something that fits in with this latest encyclical and what your guest is saying. A catechism teacher for a 12 to a 13-year-old group took too much for granted. You're talking about, people you admire, and one girl, this was on your Catholic radio, I forgot what program, she said, Hitler is admirable because he followed his dreams. So whatever dreams you have, you know, it's like Nike, go for it, but wait a minute, you have to question, is this dream good for me, is it in accordance with what God wants? Just like this culture, and it's follow your dreams, just do it, it's like, no, what your guest says, and this encyclical, no, we have to put the God has to be at the center of everything, and God is truth.
Well, yeah, and also, if you remember the line that I read from the encyclical, and actually Pope Benedict was quoting in the late Paul VI, saying that the society, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have time to actually find the actual quote in the document, but saying that people, you know, are perishing because they don't think. I mean, you know, what's hitting our society, and this was, 40-plus years ago that Pope Paul VI said this, that people aren't thinking anymore. And we're not, and this is what Benedict does, and this is what, Richard does, and people putting this information out there, connecting the dots and doing it in a loving way. That's love, giving people the information, you know, about how we're supposed to live according to God's law. And you know, Richard, what is so frustrating to me is that, you know, you see some of these talk shows, and they were talking about the program, Terry was talking about some programs on MSNBC, and they're always just spewing hatred toward Christians.
Yeah.
I mean, especially Christians, but I mean, anybody who is, you know, to the right of center, you know, just vile things they're saying, and then we're accused of hate. And if anyone's ever heard you speak, I mean, I think I told you that I was with at a dinner party not too long ago, people who were at your event in Michigan who couldn't say enough about how loving you were and respectful.
Mm.
Yeah, it's turned on its head, though. You know what I mean? Very frustrating to me. Very frustrating, because this is all about love. This is true love here.
Right. We love them more than they are actually
love themselves,
able to
actually,
love themselves,
probably. Them. Yeah.
You know, those who decry tolerance today, like you're saying, Teresa, they are the most intolerant people. It's my way or the highway. Instead of, you know, the real diversity that they're espousing, it's a one-sided issue, and in the media as well. And then to hear what we're saying, they do. They classify us, they character assassinate us, and they put us down. So even Nietzsche said, be careful in fighting the dragon, you don't become it. Mm. And they have.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the phones. Pat calling from New Jersey this morning on line 3. Hi, Pat. Good morning.
Good morning, Teresa. Good morning, Doctor. Have there been any studies done showing the link between homosexual tendencies with early childhood sex education programs? and also through the influence of pornography?
Okay. Not to my knowledge. I know that Dr. George Reekers, who's on this scientific advisory board of NARTH, does a lot of work with youth and adolescence and the correlation with homosexuality. The basis of homosexuality is it's multifactorial, but essentially the child doesn't feel a connection with the same gender parent and then doesn't feel connected with same gender peers. That's a guy doesn't feel like he bonds well with his dad, and then he doesn't bond well with other guys, or the girl with mom and then other girls. And then generally we find these are highly sensitive children. So they get hurt easily, and they don't let the parents or other people know that they're hurt. They keep it in, and then when they go through adolescence, they're gender disidentified. They haven't yet internalized their sense of masculinity from dad and other boys and the girl from mom and other girls. And then those emotional needs become sexually charged, and that's when the world says you're gay or lesbian, which is a misnomer. They're just hurt children who haven't yet sufficiently bonded. Those are some of the key core reasons people will develop same-sex attraction.
Boy, Richard, we have to have you back on. Just compelling information. So I want to encourage people to go to changespossible.com, but also the NARTH website again is what?
N-A-R-T-H, NARTH.com, right-hand column. You can click on Journal of Human Sexuality to find out all about this new study, which is showing that the therapy and religious-mediated organizations help people out of homosexuality. It's helpful. It makes people feel better, and that truly in the homosexual population, there is a lot more pathology, unfortunately, than in the heterosexual population.
Mm-hmm. And again, I want to close with this quote, which is what we're talking about here, love and truth. And the Holy Father, of course, with his latest encyclical, "Without truth, charity degenerates into sentimentality. Love becomes an empty shell to be filled in an arbitrary way. In a culture without truth, this is the fatal risk facing love. It falls prey to contingent subjective emotions and opinions. The word love is abused and distorted to the point where it comes to mean the opposite." John 8:30, true, the truth will set you free, and that truth is Jesus Christ. Have a great Thursday. We'll talk to you tomorrow on a Friday with Janet Marana and a special pro-life event that's coming up in Columbus that you don't want to miss. Have a great Thursday. See you later.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith. The University of Detroit Mercy School of Law's mobile law office will be stopping in Roseville to provide free legal assistance to low-income veterans on Tuesday, July 7th at Vietnam Veterans of America on 12 Mile Road from 2 to 4 p.m. This stop is part of the statewide tour of the mobile law office called Project Salute, funded by a grant from the state of Michigan to provide low-income veterans legal aid. For further details, call 888-836-5294. All are invited to join St. Albertus Parish for a Polish picnic Sunday, July 12th after the 11 a.m. Mass. Parking is available at St. Aubin and Canfield in Detroit, and the meal is modestly priced. Call 313-527-9321 for more information. You can find many more events at our website, AveMariaRadio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077.
Ave Maria University presents Summer Barbecue with the Founder, featuring AMU founder Tom Monahan, Tuesday, July 21st at 5 p.m. at Domino's Farms EVA Cafe. Receive exciting updates about AMU, hear testimonies from students, and see the vision of how educating our youth for success will have a positive impact on the church and the world. The cost for this event is $10 per person and free for all high school students. RSVP by Monday, July 20th. For more information, call 734.